Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Before we get into the show, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star rating and review of Olympic and Bundy. It's helpful in keeping the show going and getting it into more ears. It would be greatly appreciated. Okay, today is the guy who started one of the first online fact-checking sites known as Snopes.com. In a time before social media and the ability to pull up your web browser and find anything on the internet thanks to search engines, David Mickelson was discussing urban legends on the Usenet network alt.folklore.urban. In 1994, he started the website Snopes. Originally, it was an online encyclopedia focusing on urban legends and, you know, debunking those weird email chain messages and things like that. More than two decades later, here we are in the era of fake news and misinformation purposely being shared. And Snopes has evolved a bit in what topics it covers, but it's still fact-checking. David is currently in the midst of a legal battle with a digital services company, which we talk about in the episode, and also how exactly the website goes about fact-checking various stories, Photoshop memes, videos, all the other stuff you see flying around on Facebook, and more. He joined me for this on Skype. So I hope you enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
I'm really excited to get to talk to you because I've been on Snopes all the time. There's so many times where my husband and I will be sitting around and we're looking at something our friend posted on Facebook and you're like, wait, is she actually talking about something that's true? And then we'll Google it and we land on Snopes. So this is awesome. This is a huge pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you're not working, doing the things that Snopes does, what do you like to do for fun? I know that I've read that you go to board game conventions. You're very into board games, as am I.
Yes.
What are kind of like your extracurricular activities? What do you like to do when you're not, you know, quote unquote working?
Well, so I always said to do a lot of board gaming when I can. We like to do escape rooms. We incorporated one into our wedding, actually. We had an escape room in our wedding.
What? Do tell. Like the guests had to escape?
Yes. Not exactly an escape, but we hired a firm that designs escape rooms and things to try and incorporate one into our wedding. So the conceit was that, Alyssa, my wife, our wedding, the venue was, it's called a castle. It's actually an old English manor house that somebody carted over stone by stone and rebuilt near Tacoma, but it's called a castle because it looks old and it's English. But, she came down the stairs with her father, behind all the assembled guests and stopped on the landing. And she was wearing a black dress instead of her wedding dress. She was, oh, I can't marry David. And she read this note that supposedly some anonymous person had left talking about how they'd hidden the rings, but it was, no ill intent, but that they left clues so people could find them. So all the guests had to look under their chairs and they'd find a card with a symbol that told them which team they were on. So they all had to form their teams and go out and scour the grounds and inside the castle trying to find clues to where the missing rings were hidden.
Wow.
It was a little rigged. Like they gave me the last piece in advance. So it was a guarantee that I was going to solve it and find the rings. And there were people from the firm we hired kind of disguised as my board gaming buddies, guests, so that they could furtively offer hints if things were moving along too quickly. So the guests were going to find the rings in an hour, no matter what, but I was trying to think, I always think weddings are kind of so dull and formulaic. It's like, I wouldn't even go to this one, except I have to, cause I'm in it. So how can we make it fun for everybody else?
I'm 100% in agreement with that. I feel like like you've been to so many weddings where it's the same thing over and over again, that anytime someone does something just different, I immediately am so about it. I love that. That's cool.
Yeah. So to follow on from that, escape rooms, like to go to the Mariners games when I can. You know, I grew up a huge Dodger fan, you know, and went to games in LA all the time. So,
yes. You know,
but it, like anything else, it takes a lot of time to actually get into a sports venue
with
all the traffic and lines and security, and takes a big chunk out of the day.
Yeah, it definitely does. So, that's actually why I've never been to a Dodgers game, pretty much for that reason, because I'm kind of too lazy to go through the process of getting there.
Yeah. So we like to do, you know, we like to travel. We travel a lot, but lately it's almost exclusively been for business and not pleasure. So,
you know, gotcha.
Try and squeeze a few days in when we can on business. You know.
I like it. I'm wondering if you could maybe talk about your first experience or experiences with the internet in general.
My first experiences with the internet. Mm-hmm. Well, way back when, like around the late 1980s, I was working at JPL, and I was working for what was then a very large computer company that no longer exists. So given that we were so large, we were kind of connected to the internet before most people had ever even heard of the internet. So I was, you know, on the internet in the old Usenet news groups, you know, talking about urban legends and Disney and, you know, other things that interested me. And it just kind of spurred me to start kind of looking into and writing up some of those stories and rumors we'd discuss, like something like, you know, is Walt Disney really, was he frozen after he died? I mean, that's kind of an intersection of Disney and urban legendary. And I actually went out to Forest Lawn where he's interred and took pictures of the site to kind of demonstrate that, you know, if he's frozen, you know, they're pretending he's buried here. And so I used to post those kinds of things on Usenet, but that's like ephemeral. You know, things would disappear from news feeds after a while. So when the, the first graphical browser came out, when Mozilla first released, you know, it's kind of the start of the web. The web existed, but it was all text-based. So when the first graphical browser came out, I just set up this little site where I was writing about Disney legends, you know, and, you know, these, like, showing the little things that are supposedly hidden in Disney films, the little risque messages and things. And it just kind of, it branched out from there. I just, you know, wrote a bunch of Disney legends and then branched out into a few other categories. And I mean, this was way back before social media, before search engines even. I mean, Yahoo was still hand compiling directories of websites. So
this is what, like 1994? Ish.
Yeah, around 1994, yeah, tail end of 1994.
I have to say, as someone who's grown up primarily with the ability to use a search engine, the internet before search engines is so interesting to me. It just seems, it's almost like I can't fathom it.
Yes.
I remember Alta Vista. I think we maybe had Alta Vista in my house early on. But so setting up a website in the year, say, you know, 93, 94, 95, how do you get traffic to your website?
I worked for the company that created Alta Vista. It's kind of like, it's like, ooh, a search engine. And then it kind of died off and Google took over. But I mean, it was kind of amazing. Well, I mean, one is that all of the reputation of you know, and awareness of the site was built completely by like word of mouth, because first of all, there was really no way you could promote it back then, you know, on the internet, without even search engines. And, you know, we did no advertising or promotion. It just however people stumbled across those things, I mean, through like Yahoo's directory or just emailing each other, it kind of took off and took a complete left turn from what I was intending, because, you know, I was setting up kind of this encyclopedic reference to urban legends. It kind of like a Wikipedia for urban legends, except not a wiki. But, you know, that kind of concept, an online encyclopedia, you know, very well documented, very authoritative. But we just sort of quickly became the place where everybody on the internet started sending anything questionable they came across. You know, there were a lot of computer virus warnings, most of which were hoaxes going around back then. There were a lot of people emailing missing child alerts, a lot of which were either hoaxes or not really missing children, but custody disputes. I mean, it was kind of like the frontier days of the internet when there weren't central authorities for a lot of things. Like now you might go to the, you know, the website of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children or whatever it's called these days to find out if, you know, is this child really missing? But back then, you know, just nothing. And like, fake photos and fake videos weren't a thing in the sense that there was no YouTube, you know, there was no photo sharing sites. So to get things like that going, people had to forward them an email, and it really took weeks for something to reach what we now call viral. Mm-hmm. And gave us plenty of time to like look into things, try and find out where they came from. And now somebody posts something outrageous on Facebook, and within, you know, half an hour, it's a headline story in the New York Post or the Daily Mail or something. I mean, there's really no cook time anymore to jumping on these things.
Oh, definitely. That's a topic I definitely want to get back to. I'm curious, though. I was reading about how, so you're doing this. It's kind of started as just something that you were already doing, a hobby, a passion. And then at yes. some point you kind of, it became your actual full-time job.
Correct.
And then September 11th happened, right?
Yes.
And you guys were sort of covering stories that were existing online, but traditional news sources weren't necessarily touching them, right?
Correct. It was, you know, back then, 2001, most of the major news outlets had a web presence, but they were, for the most part, just reproducing their print content. The idea of covering the internet as, you know, kind of like a news sphere itself didn't really exist. You know, people weren't, as I mentioned, like, you know, somebody posts something on Facebook, it's a headline half an hour later. But what was happening on the internet was not then considered, you know, sort of a newsworthy topic. So after the September 11 attacks, I mean, almost immediately the same day, all these rumors, conspiracy theories, you know, exhortations to, you know, help fight terrorism by boycotting all these companies supposedly associated with Osama bin Laden, all of that was out there, and it was purely an online phenomenon. I mean, people weren't, you know, really spreading these rumors, you know, over the back fence with their neighbors. So yeah, we were kind of like the first and for a while the only ones who were sort of tracking all of these, you know, categorizing them, trying to find out if they were true or not. You know, now you see, I mean, the same phenomenon happens after, you know, like every mass shooting, every terrorist attack, all those things fly out there, but everybody is covering them, you know, in real time.
Yeah. So yeah, at the time, so before that, you guys were kind of doing more like odd folklore, kind of urban legend type true or not true things. And this yeah. started to transition to some more serious international kind of international news type topics around this
time. International news, but just more kind of the sort of things that people now post on social media. But there was no social media yeah. then, so like it was like email, really. But yeah, I mean, just kind of all of the weird stuff that pops up on the internet. I mean, a lot of it hasn't changed that much. I mean, there's a lot of not fake videos, but there's a lot of videos that are out of context or excerpted or something like that, and it looks like they present one thing, but they really don't. And you know, just a lot of people questioning odd stuff they see in the news because, unfortunately, still a lot of times news media don't get stories quite right, or they don't actually cover the whole story. I'm not talking about big stuff like politics. I mean, that happens too, but we get, say, a lot of crime warnings, say, where somebody reports that, you know, they came back to the parking lot and found a shirt over the windshield of their car. And this was obviously intended to make them get out of the car so they could be robbed, you know, and people would report this to the police, and you know, some news outlets would write this up and just say, oh, you know, robbery attempt, and not actually like look into it. Like, are police aware of this form of crime? Has it ever happened before? You know, or is it just somebody tossed a shirt on a car? They weren't really interested in covering the whole story and sort of, you know, tamping down the interesting part of it. So, you know, a lot of that still goes on.
I feel on that same token, I feel like that happens a lot with health stories, just things in the health industry that the headline is sellable. So a lot of news entities will jump on it and report it when, you know, it's just, it's a catchy study or it's, you know, something that'll make your head turn, but it's not necessarily the whole entire story.
Yeah, we were just joking about that with the staff yesterday because we were looking at this kind of infographic where it shows the chart of an academic paper saying, you know, a, you know, possibly correlated with increased cancer, you know, cause of cancer, you know, when in the presence of B, when conditions C and D apply. And by the time it works its way around through the news and the internet, it's A causes cancer always, you know. So, so yeah, a lot of academic studies and papers get sensationalized for news consumption. So yeah, that's a lot of what we do. Yes.
So kind of going back to what you were talking about previously with just kind of how the speed at which stories go viral, like obviously there's a big difference from when in 94, 95 versus 2018. It could be maybe a couple weeks or months to like an hour, 20 minutes even.
Yes.
How do you guys kind of decide topics to write about now? And I guess how is that process changed over time, if it has, if it hasn't?
Yeah, well, sort of the process is kind of the same. The complexity is a lot more. Initially, it was pretty easy. We just look at what people were emailing us, and we also look at what terms people were entering into our search engine. And it's like, okay, we know what people are interested in for the most part. You know, no social media to worry about now. Again, it's still kind of the same concept, as in we tackle whatever the most people are asking about or looking into at any one time, except, you know, besides email and search engine, we have to look at what they're posting on Facebook, what they're posting on Twitter, what's trending on Google, you know, what's hot on Reddit. You know, there's a whole lot more inputs to synthesize because, you know, something can be big on a particular social media platform, but people aren't necessarily emailing us about it or vice versa. So we kind of have to synthesize all those inputs and try and come up with what should we be writing about. And, you know, also we're a lot, it's a little tougher because we're a lot broader than most other, you know, organizations in this market niche, so to speak, that we don't exclusively cover politics or, you know, we don't, you know, focus on everything outside of politics like some other sites do. You know, we're kind of taking on anything, and we don't discard anything because it's too obvious or ridiculous or unimportant. I mean, sometimes we get criticized for that, like, oh, you're debunking this satire, that's so stupid. But I've been doing this long enough to know, no, there is nothing so obvious that people will not believe it. So
yes. Here I'll look at stories that are posted on the Facebook page at Fox Los Angeles or, you know, any news organization, social media. And it's amazing the stories that, quote unquote, get engagement, that people are the most interested in. And it's almost sometimes depressing what people want to know. And, you know, maybe the feel good, the stories that you think are making a difference or impactful or good, people don't care about them. And then you put out there a terrible, just kind of twisted thing and people are into it. Does it sometimes, I guess, depress you or like just it says something about society, I guess, what people are searching for or what they want to know about?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd say depressing, maybe discouraging. Like, maybe something like there's been reports of, say, you know, a chemical attack against civilians in Syria. you know, and that gets just, you know, a marginal amount of interest from people asking, like, you know, did this really happen? You know, was it the government that did it? Was it, you know, somebody else who did it and blamed it on the government? You know, are the white hats in Syria really, you know, a pro-citizen organization or working on behalf of somebody else? You know, not much interest, but you get a story like, woman gives birth to litter of kittens in elevator, or, you know, a fake picture of President Trump, you know, experiencing an attack of diarrhea on the golf course. And it's, you know, millions of views. It's, you know, it's like if a chemical attack in Syria maybe made gasoline prices go up to $8 a gallon, then people would be, you know, paying attention to it. But yeah, it's often a little discouraging how much people focus on the trivial and the unimportant rather than things that actually affect their lives directly and the lives of people all over the world, you know.
Yeah.
But kind of there's a whole news and entertainment industry built on that, really, that, you know, you appeal to what your audience wants.
Oh, yes, there sure is. Related
just
to,
it's been really interesting so far today. I mean, today we like set a new record for traffic this morning because there's been this confluence of rumors. One of them has to do with the eclipse that's coming tonight, which is true, although it's not really going to be viewable to most people in the United States. Then there's been these other couple of fake rumors, like the one that comes back every year about Mars is going to appear as big as the moon in the sky tonight, which is kind of a joke because if there were an eclipse, you wouldn't see them. And also this perennial topic that never goes away about, you know, the Earth's going to be bombarded by cosmic rays tonight. And tonight is always, you know, tonight. For years, it's been tonight. So it's just kind of like the confluence of those three sort of somewhat related items was just sending traffic crazy this morning, including there's a ton of traffic from India. I'm not really sure why they're particularly interested in that, but it could have to do with maybe that's a place where you can see the eclipse.
Yeah.
But
sounds like we have a big weekend ahead. Big Friday night.
Yeah, but it'll be all over after today.
Yeah. So the way that you guys are establishing ratings for certain fact check stories is complex. You know, it could be true, false, mostly true, mostly false, a mixture, miscaptioned. And obviously the things that you cover can be very complex. So I know this might be a harder question to answer, but I'm just curious on the time that you and your staff take to sort of research a story. I'm sure sometimes it could be as simple as, oh, well, I'll just Google this and it turns out not true. But is there ever some pretty lengthy things that take days or sometimes months?
Yeah, true. I mean, some things you literally do in a matter of minutes, like people are asking about something that comes from a site that does nothing but churn out fake news. You don't really need to do a whole lot of research on that because, you know, everything from this source is just made up. I mean, some things take longer. They take a whole day, multiple days, weeks. We may never, you know, some things we start and may never be able to finish because, you know, if it requires tracking down, a lot of information or people, sometimes you just can't get access to the information. Sometimes you can't get a hold of people or they're unwilling to talk. So it kind of runs the gamut. And plus, because, we're covering everything from, is this photo real to, will the passage of this legislative bill really mean that, X is going to happen? I mean, there's no one approach to anything,
it's very complicated.
Yeah. I mean, generally, given the resources we have, we try and avoid, things that just from the get-go just seem like this is going to tie up a whole lot of time and resources and we may never be able to get to the end of it. We just can't, we could be covering 20 other things in that time with those resources. So sometimes we have to decide, we're going to cut our losses on this,
Do you, out of curiosity, do you read every article that's published? Or, I mean, is it kind of like one person will write it and then it gets passed through multiple eyeballs or, how does that happen?
Well, I mean, I do read everything that gets published, but it's going through multiple eyeballs before it gets published. Yeah, not just like the writer and up, and then I read it. So of course, I mean, you always need to have, you know, more in the chain, you know, to edit for typographic, you know, say any publication, you know, typographical errors, you know, backup fact checking, you know, style, you know, all those sorts of things go into a piece before it's published.
Yeah.
So it's also sometimes, you know, since you were talking about rating things, you know, and sometimes, you know, ratings can really take a lot of work because, as in, most people want things to be, you know, black and white, you know, it's true or it's false. And most things, especially political things, typically have a whole lot of gray to them. And unless you narrowly focus on one aspect of something, you can't just say it's true or it's false. And oftentimes it's complicated because it's not clear what aspect of a rumor people might be questioning, like, I don't know, you know, was Elizabeth, you know, did Elizabeth Warren, you know, get a job by claiming she was Native American and then, you know, get paid $430,000 to teach one class? You know, what aspect are there people focusing on, that she claimed to be Native American, that she got paid a whole bunch of money, that she supposedly only taught one class, you know? And sometimes we have to adjust ratings based, you know, on that we're addressing one particular aspect and then the audience shifts. And I mean, so that happens a lot of times over time, that, you know, a piece that we wrote years ago becomes current again, but people are focusing on a different aspect of it. And the rating has to adjust accordingly.
Right. It's layered, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So we're obviously in the era of misinformation. It's, you know, it's out there. Half truths, all of those words that get tossed around, which is exciting because I feel like I'm talking to the person who is basically responsible for sorting out myths and rumors on the internet. It's definitely something that's needed. This is interesting to me. I was reading about how I think it was in 2014 when you guys added people to your stuff. Is that right? So did you see sort of the era of fake news happening, or was it just sort of, you know, you were like, oh, it might be time to sort of expand the company, or like, was it a mix of things?
I wish I could claim I had the foresight, like back in the mid 1990s, that, yeah, I knew fake news was going to be a big thing in 20 years. That's why I'm doing this now. But, well, it was more kind of just, I mean, at that point, I was doing everything myself, I mean, which meant everything from writing all the content to managing the servers that the site ran on and everything. That was just always a big job. But I said it kind of tied into some of the changes that we were talking about, that, you know, with the rise of social media, there was like more out there and it was moving faster. It was just like no possible way to keep up with all of that without expanding. You're either going to just like fall into irrelevance, or you really need more people to, you know, be covering this stuff as close to real time as possible.
Right.
And then, of course, yes, the surprising contentiousness and outcome of the last presidential election, really, you know, I mean, 2008 was also big in that regard. But, you know, it's just kind of like 2016 really topped all of that. You know, and it kind of, the following on from the result of the election, and, you know, which was, you know, unexpected by many people, shall we say, and, you know, kind of the rise of, oh my gosh, you know, maybe there was foreign influence that was actually working to, you know, to try and skew the outcome of this election, you know, the whole fake news and no people on, you know, Macedonia were using Facebook to spread all this false information, kind of like propelled the whole fact-checking industry into prominence.
Oh, yeah, certainly. That actually, so it's sometimes if you go on Reddit or certain places, people like to say that Snopes is almost like left-leaning sometimes, or like kind of anti-Donald Trump. And from what I've gathered, it doesn't seem like you're political at all. Like, I feel like it's just sort of like, no, we just do what we do. We don't really have a mission per se. Like, it doesn't seem like you are one way or the other. So why is that?
Well, I said a lot of it's just, you know, well, people don't like information that contradicts what they want to believe. So they often, you know, when confronted with that, they often just try and deal with it by, you know, disclaiming or discrediting the source. But you know, a lot of that is you know, actually those claims are made by people who clearly haven't actually read the site, because if you actually say looked up everything we had written about Donald Trump, I mean, I can't say off the top of my head, but I would say probably the vast bulk of it, you know, 80% or more, is debunking just fake stuff about Donald Trump, fake photos, you know, fake news. I mean, things that claim to be satirical but are really fake news, you know, fake quotes, you know, just, you know, as with anybody, you know, we're mostly debunking fake negative stuff, because most of what's out there that people are questioning is stuff that's made up or exaggerated or out of context, so it tends to be false. And, you know, probably that reputation came because until fairly recently, in internet terms, you know, the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, for whatever reason, the vast majority of political stuff we encountered on the internet was anti-democratic, anti-liberal. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was like 90% to 10%, you know, if not even more skewed. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, there are a lot of theories you could posit about why that was, but it's only within the last, really, I said like 3 or 4 years, kind of like the other side's caught up, and, you know, people have been, you know, started, you know, Facebook groups and sites that are, you know, like, you know, Occupy Democrats and things that are kind of blasting a liberal message out there and unfortunately throwing more misinformation into the mix. So.
Oh, yeah. Has there been, off the top of your head, has there been any particular story, I guess, in the past couple of years or maybe in the whole time you've been doing Snopes that you feel like, man, if this gets around, this is going to be really bad? Just a particular story that stuck with you, like, no, we have to debunk this. This can't, no, you people, it's wrong.
Oh, because if we don't debunk it, something bad will happen. I don't know if we've ever done some specifically for that reason. There are some that have had that effect, like, you know, some of the just the completely made up fake news pieces. I mean, you know, not political stuff, but just sites that just make up things and, you know, will make up a story about, you know, I don't know, school kids being sent home from school, you know, at some, you know, like high school in Texas because of an outbreak of Ebola, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that was a stupid fake news story, but people are actually calling the school and calling the police and, you know, checking with hospitals because they've heard about this, their kids go to that school or they live in Texas. And, you know, that's, it's not only bad that it's spreading fear for no, you know, useful purpose whatsoever, but it's tying up resources. It's tying up school personnel. It's tying up police. It's tying up medical staff. I mean, just, you know, you think it's just dumb fake news, but it, you know, it often has real world effects. I mean, yeah. I don't know that there's anything out there that's so bad. I mean, that's really tops what's actually going on in our current political climate at this moment. You know, it's like, oh, we got to tamp this down. You know, and, you know, like a lot of the rumors that circulate after, I said, like tragic events like terrorist attacks and school shootings. You know, I don't know that we're actually helping to stop anything, but, you know, you see so often that people are misidentifying suspects. You know, they're putting names and pictures out there inadvertently or deliberately of people who had nothing to do with it. And, you know, a lot of, I mean, you can imagine, like with the Pizzagate thing, where somebody eventually showed up with a gun at that restaurant looking to protect children. You know, it hasn't happened yet that I can think of, but imagine if somebody did act on one of those, you know, misidentifications of a suspect and decided to take things into their own hands and, you know, killed or harmed an innocent person based on that, you know. Mm-hmm. I just hope it doesn't come to that, but, you know, it's certainly possible given what's happened.
Yeah. And on that note, does it get a little bit overwhelming, I guess, as far as like in the past couple of years, as more and more fake, quote unquote, fake news sites have established and, you know, the perpetrators have grown in numbers? Or is that overwhelming to you? Or is it sort of like, oh, I like a challenge, bring it on? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's no shortage of things to to write about. And it's, you know, it's sometimes frustrating, like, oh, you know, there's so many things that we, you know, we probably should be covering that we can't get to them. And then especially when it follow on for that, people claiming you're deliberately not writing about something out of, you know, to cover it up or out of some vested interest. I mean, we do get a lot of, you know, email that, you know, kind of the tone of it is like as if we had infinite resources. You know, if something's not on our site, it's been deliberately left off rather than just, you know, we don't have infinite resources to cover it. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a game of whack-a-mole. I mean, the internet's allowed people to spread misinformation, you know, faster and more widely than ever before. And, you know, it's kind of an arms race where, you know, lots of people are working on the technology to identify those things and track them and stop them as soon as possible, and to try and demonetize the sites that spread that sort of thing to eliminate the incentive to be doing it. You know, the typical cat and mouse game. Like, you know, they do something, we find a way to counter it, they come up with something new, and I'm not sure when that will play out all the way to the end.
Yeah, I like that's a great metaphor, a game of whack-a-mole. I feel like because of course I know I've read like Facebook enlisted various fact-checking sites and, you know, news organizations to kind of combat that, and, you know, whether it's helped or not. Snopes was included in that, I think.
And, you know, the Facebook's been in the news a lot lately about that, you know.
Yeah, they yesterday had a bad day.
Exactly. But I mean, you know, it's pretty easy. I mean, not that I have, you know, not that I have a vested interest in Facebook either. But, you know, I admittedly, they're in a pretty tough position. It's pretty easy to say, yeah, Holocaust deniers shouldn't have a platform, or somebody like Alex Jones shouldn't have a platform to claim that school shootings are hoaxes, and these, you know, there's all these adults and children, you know, crisis actors pretending to be victims to fool people. But it's kind of like, yeah, but then where do you go from there? I mean, you know, it's just, you know, the typical slippery slope argument. Where are you going to draw the line? You know, that puts them in a very tough position when they start actually cutting people off and booting them off of Facebook. You know, where does that stop?
Oh, yeah, that's a super slippery slope. When I was thinking about things I wanted to ask you, I started thinking about how video is getting so good to manipulate, like kind of artificial intelligence video. I mean, you can put a face on another body and you could barely tell that it's doctored. And I'm wondering if, kind of as this gets better, are there certain tools that you're aware of out there that are also being developed to kind of tell if this is happening? Have you had to look into a lot of videos? Is this kind of a thing that you guys are focusing on too now? Has that come up a lot?
Yeah, well, of course, there's been a lot of discussion about that. For the most part, I think most of the videos that we've dealt with so far are usually not that the video itself is faked. I mean, that sometimes happens, although those usually tend to be like advertisements or other forms of entertainment. But, you know, most of the, say, like the political video at this point has been things that's presented out of context or cut in a misleading way, you know, to create the false impression about what transpired or what was said. But yeah, the video technology is catching up. I mean, I've been, you know, pondering for a long time that usually when we're debunking fake photos, the easiest approach is that people are modifying some other innocuous photograph and turning it into something different. And when you go and find that original, you can show, well, look, somebody edited this photo to add something in or take something out. But, you know, I felt for a long time, eventually the software is going to get to the point where people don't need to be using, you know, an existing photograph as a basis. They can create something from scratch. So when that day comes, that's going to be a challenge. And you said, like with the video, again, they're not creating whole videos from scratch yet. Yeah, but it's pretty easy to manipulate like mouth movements and words and make somebody look like they're saying something they're not. And yeah, and I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, there are a whole lot of things you know, kicked around as, you know, everything from using blockchain to track the provenance of videos from their origination to, you know, looking at the embedded information that comes with them. But yeah, that all kinds of depends on whoever creates them, you know, wanting them to be tracked from the source, you know, and
yeah,
I don't know how people are going to do that, you know, unless there's no way around it.
In a way, the technology to me is like really interesting. It's cool that you can do that, but obviously it's also really terrifying that you could put words
yes.
into someone's mouth.
Yes.
So I want to talk about, so when you go to Snopes, right on the homepage, there's the kind of public donation campaign going on.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about how sort of the legal process you've been going through and also mm-hmm. ways that people can contribute to Snopes if, you know, they appreciate what you do and think of it as a public service that we need. So if I understand it correctly, you guys had enlisted a company like called Proper Media to sort of handle ad right. revenue and some other elements on Snopes.
Yeah, advertising and, services and web development, yes.
Okay, and yeah. the contract, you guys decided to end the contract and they disputed that saying, no, you can't, so they withheld ad revenue from you guys.
Well, yes, essentially the contract was terminated. Which we had the full right to do. It could be canceled at any time for any reason by either party. By that time, it was a hugely disadvantageous contract for us. So I gave them the required notice that we were canceling it and instructed them to migrate our site to neutral hosting because it was completely hosted on their own servers, which they exclusively had administrative access to, and that was a very dangerous situation for us to be where, you know, a vendor we're not even working with anymore has complete control of our entire revenue stream and technical infrastructure. So, they held the website hostage, continued to populate it with their own ads, and withheld all of that advertising revenue. And it wasn't really in terms of dispute, even if the contract had continued, there was no basis for them to keep 100% of our advertising revenue. They, you know, that wasn't a term of the contract that you keep all of our revenue. So that wasn't really a reasonable argument for why they stole all of our money, essentially.
So you guys, in turn, had to basically start a GoFundMe to get money and keep the website afloat and keep Snopes
yes.
up and how to really, I mean, raise a lot of money pretty quickly.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Was that, were you kind of surprised by that? I mean, just how quickly, because from what I gathered, it raised a lot of money. And I was even reading comments on the GoFundMe today and it's like, I believe in this. We need this more than ever right now. It's a public service Snopes is doing for us. Like, that's why I'm donating. Yes. Because Snopes is your baby, I feel like. So were you very
yes.
touched by that?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of an unfortunate aspect of our legal process that, you know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money, even when you're 100% in the right, to actually mm-hmm. get something adjudicated to the end. So it's kind of like, you know, we had a bunch of money stolen from us and it cost us as much, if not more, to get it back. Yeah, in the meanwhile, you can't operate a company with zero income coming in. So, we couldn't put any ads on the site, of our own. So what could we do other than like ask for donations? So, yeah, I mean, we had to pick an amount, a target amount for the GoFundMe. We really didn't know what would we need. We just kind of had to pick an amount that's like, this is reasonable. We could reach this goal and not cause people to think, what do you need all that money for? You know, you guys are greedy. We just picked an amount. And I thought, you know, okay, 500,000, maybe, you know, the first several days we might get a couple hundred thousand and then it'll peter out. But like, no, I mean, we raised well beyond the target just within the first couple of days. So yeah, that was really amazing and gratifying that so many people, you know, yeah. chipped in to help.
And the judge ruled in your favor to where they basically had to disperse those funds, the Proper Media disperse those funds back to you. But this case is still ongoing, right? So it's sort of going through the legal system, and then you still are obviously funding court fees and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I said again, it's a lengthy process because there hasn't been a trial. So first we had to get a, you know, a temporary restraining order to keep them from withholding some of the money to allow us to keep going for the time being. And then we had to get a preliminary injunction to get them to release more of the money. And then they didn't comply with the preliminary injunction and continue withholding money. So we had to keep going to court to try and pry more and more of it out of them.
Court. Very fun.
Yes. So right now there's a contempt motion pending in San Diego court against Proper Media for not complying with the judge's instructions to stop withholding money from us.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's kind of to be determined.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. So because I have noticed that if you go right to Snopes.com, if people, you know, are hearing this and appreciate the service that Snopes provides, you can obviously donate to it.
I just mentioned one of the challenges for us is that, you know, there are other fact-checking organizations, but, you know, most of them, at least the bigger ones, are, you know, nonprofits and or they're connected with some larger entity, you know, like a foundation or you know, a news outlet, and we're not any of those things. We're completely, you know, self-supported and self-funding, and, you know, up until, you know, fairly recently, all of our revenue has come from online advertising, and that's, you know, every web publisher will, you know, said that's an increasingly tough market, more and more people competing for kind of the same pie, and there's a whole lot of fraud that drains money from honest publishers. There's a whole lot of fake news people out there who are, you know, cutting into ad revenues that, you know, deserve to go to more responsible purveyors of news. So, you know, yeah, it's tough. Yeah.
We were kind of joking last week about how it's really easy to make a website now and make it look really professional, almost like a legitimate news organization's website. And we were kind of joking around that Snopes should have kind of like a Snopes University that's like teaching to kids media literacy or, you know, kind of things like that in schools. Are there things that, you know, given your current situation aside and sort of if there's infinite amount of time and money, what are some things that you sort of feel like, oh, you know what, Snopes in the future, we're going for that?
Oh, I mean, there's a whole lot of projects we could be doing. And like one of the things you mentioned is like, because that comes up all the time, is like teaching media literacy to children or, you know, students. And, you know, we know from talking to a lot of teachers that they use our site in their classroom when they're teaching that or something related, because I think, you know, just not just because it's like the oldest and most well-known, but also, I said, because we cover so much stuff that, you know, it's not just, oh, politics. If you're trying to interest a, you know, a fifth grader you know, how to judge what's good or what's not, you know, a little entertainment in there. But, yeah, I mean, there's lots of things we could be doing, course materials to, you know, fake news games or fake news escape rooms or other things that, you know, kind of teach, media literacy and that sort of thing in a fun way. I mean, we could be, you know, even things like podcasts, television shows. I mean, all of those things, you know, you think, well, those things make money for you, but, you know, I'm sure you know, you have to invest a lot of time and resources, including money, to get those things going. You know, like, who's going to produce this? Who's going to distribute this? You know,
Oh, I hear that.
Yes. So, you know, it's not as easy as it seems.
I can imagine. I feel like I read a story about on Snopes about if maggots grew in a man's brain. Are you familiar with that? I feel like my fifth grade self would have enjoyed fact checking that.
Quite possibly so, yeah. I said, unfortunately, like so much of what we do now is politics, given the current climate, that, you know, we rarely have time for like the stuff I was originally doing way back when we started, just like fun stuff that, you know, is just doesn't have an impact on anything. It's just fun, you know, is there really a basketball court in the top of the Matterhorn Mountain at Disneyland? You know,
is there?
well, they never I mean, it never was real AIM. It's kind of like there was a platform up there and somebody stuck a basketball hoop on the wall. So
mostly false, mostly false.
Yeah. You're really stretching the definition of basketball court. You could say that.
So before we wrap up, I'm curious, how do you get news? Do you watch TV, or are you kind of a newspaper guy? Are you just sort of looking everywhere? Are you looking on the internet?
Typically, while I'm working, I have, you know, some news station on the TV in the background, but I'm not really paying attention to it unless something huge or breaking comes by. It's more kind of like white noise and make sure I don't miss anything. For actual news, I'm generally using like Google News, just, you know, see a whole screen full of stuff either, you know, on my desktop or on my cell phone, you know, where admittedly even that, you know, you get something of a skewed picture because they're, you know, always tracking the kinds of things that you're interested in and reading and showing you more of that content. So, you know, you can never claim your news feed is completely neutral, but for the most part, that's, you know, I'm looking at that and seeing a whole bunch of different publications and, you know, clicking through to the things that interest me. You know.
I feel like you'd be really fun to be Facebook friends with because, like, I'm just picturing, you know, like when you scroll through a news feed and you see someone you went to high school with that's like, Facebook is censoring this because I mentioned so-and-so. I can just picture you, like, going deep in the comments. Well, actually, no, you know. Martha, that's wrong, and kind of a lengthy response. I feel like your Usenet days could transfer well to the scariness of the Facebook feed.
Possibly, but my actual Facebook page, my wife will say, like, I'm the squarest person who's ever existed. My actual Facebook page is, for the most part, pictures of our dogs and cats and
where did we
eat and where did we visit.
As it should be.
Yes.
Very good. Well, David, thank you very much for taking the time to, you know, chat. And it's I wish you the best of luck moving forward. And I like to go to Snopes just to be entertained. I like the odd section personally.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on your podcast app to get new episodes each Sunday night, automatically downloaded onto your phone for some listening on your way into work this week. We are on all the places you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.